Good morning, church family. It is good to see you all this morning. I am very excited. From our last service was amazing, and I think it's going to be amazing again. This is our Justice and Advocacy Sunday. If you were with us last week, you remember that Pastor Jeff preached a sermon explaining how Jesus was passionate about caring for the underprivileged and the underserved. And so we did enjoy that message and we got filled up. But what is the next step? How do we put those words into action? And so that's really where we want to focus today. Months ago, we said to people who were frustrated with the way things are going, what can we do? And everybody said, we want to do more. We want to do more. So that was felt like a mandate to tell us that we have to learn, find more ways to engage ourselves, more effective ways to engage ourselves. And so today, we're going to hear from three impactful speakers who are going to share with us personal stories, ways that we can be better advocates, and what are the results of our advocacy. When we make noise, what really happens? And so we believe that biblically, we are called, we heard our verse today that Sally just read for us, Proverbs 31, verse 8 through 9. It's up on your screen. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and the needy. And as you can see, this is a biblical call to be engaged in our citizenship and to be active participants in the legislative process. And so while a lot of people will say, well, church and politics don't go together, I understand that, but we also understand how important it is that we speak up for people who are being marginalized by the system. Amen? So we know there's a lot of things going on in the world, and we want to know how we can be more active, how we can participate, how our words can make a difference. And so today we have three speakers who are going to share with us. The first one is Amy Townsend. And many of you know Amy. She was our interim worship arts minister for a long time. Yes, yes, yes. Amy also leads our trans justice team. And so we are actively working on that group to make sure that the congregation is able to get their words out and that we're able to reach our legislators and really have a powerful impact. Our second speaker is Jude Brown from the ACLU of Indiana. And if you've ever been down to the State House for a rally, you know that ACLU organizes a lot of those rallies on the ground. So Jude is going to talk to us about what happened this past legislative season and maybe some things that we can do to be involved until the next legislative season. And finally, we're going to hear from Josh Riddick. Josh is with Live Free Indiana. I met Josh at a workshop. We had a rally at the State House earlier in January. And after that rally, we went over to the Hilton Hotel for a day of workshops and breakout sessions on advocacy and how we could make an impact. And Josh led one of those workshops, and he was amazing. So I think that you're going to be uplifted today, and I hope that you'll be encouraged and empowered. The Bible tells us to not just be hearers of the word, but to be doers of the word. So that's what we're going to be focusing on today. So I hope that you'll give a warm, loving round of applause for our three speakers. And the first one that we're going to bring up is Amy Townsend. Please welcome her.
Thank you so much and good morning. My name is Amy Townsend, and I'm here this morning to share some of my experiences as a transgender person. Jeremiah 1:5 states, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart." This verse always resonates with me because I was born this way, and I know this for a fact from the very beginning. My evidence for this is that when my mother was pregnant with me, before the days of ultrasounds, she had borne two sons prior to me, and she had a very strong feeling that I was a girl. Something about me felt different to her, and she made plans to name me Patricia. But when they determined that I appeared to be a boy, my mother was disappointed and sent me back to the nursery, and so I was set apart. And from that point, I always had problems with my relationship with my parents because they wanted me to act more masculine like boys are supposed to do. I had to go along with all the dumb boy activities and was expected to enjoy them, but it never worked for me. I was continually not living up to expectations, and over time, I became rebellious and angry at myself and the world. I spent years with this anger and disillusionment. Now, my mother loved me very much, and I don't fault her for any of this, because she could not see who I was. She couldn't see because there was a mountain between us. The mountain has been in place since very far back in our civilization. It's the mountain of prejudice and fear that has obscured the light of LGBTQ people around the world since time immemorial. The default expectation of people who felt they were different in this way was to keep quiet about it. Things have changed a lot since that time. Today, some moms are listening to their transgender children and letting them be loved for who they really are. These moms are helping their children live the life they are meant to live, that God chose for them. I didn't begin to realize my true self until I was about 50. Acknowledging myself for the first time caused me to experience these little meditations where it felt like every single neuron in my brain was releasing long-held tension. Inspired by the coming out of Caitlyn Jenner, I really came out publicly at work in May of 2015. After I came into work for the first time ever as myself, I felt great. I had undertaken a test of my courage and passed. But having done this, I immediately found a tremendous amount of prejudice and scorn confronting me daily from the liberal faculty and staff. People who I had been friendly with cut off contact and would not look at me. Professors would refuse to look at me when the dean designated one bathroom as all gender. There were some educated liberals with enlightened views in many other arenas who were not ready to accept gender diversity. Luckily, I had already discovered Life Journey, and I rejoined the church in 2018, playing the bass, of course. It has been a pleasure to get to hear the sermons twice, and sometimes, though not always, the jokes. In about 2023, having come to love and appreciate Life Journey and what I was learning here, I began to be concerned about the trend towards anti-trans legislation. Around 2023, I helped found the Trans Justice Committee, and our work has made a significant impact. When the first meeting of the committee was announced to the congregation, I was stunned and amazed by how many people showed up. The room was really full. This is a church eager to move mountains. One of the first things we did was organize a campaign of billboard signs, which explained that trans people are worthy of God's love, a sentiment which many Christians would never have ever considered as a possibility. The signs were very simple, using biblical reference, that affirm gender-diverse people and that we are welcome here. Ever since that time, I have noticed that people in this area seem friendlier to me in public spaces. I believe we've had a real impact on that just by asking them to think about God's love and the simple idea that trans people are included in that love. The signs also spoke to a number of other people who were unhappy with religious hypocrisy, invited them to a place where diversity is celebrated as part of God's amazing kingdom. Another very significant thing we did was Pastor Jeff had drafted a letter to Indiana state legislators defending trans rights on biblical grounds. This he got signed by almost 100 clergy members from across the state. It turns out that a lot of Christian people can see the injustice in these anti-trans laws that were being considered. The letter was distributed to Indiana's legislature members to show them that not all Christians believe in oppressing LGBT people. That is very likely the first time many of them had ever heard any dissenting Christian voices. In subsequent activity, the legislature, itself a hot mess of a Republican supermajority, has been less eager to discriminate against trans people. In the most recent state legislative session, a very nasty bill that would have outed and forced the misgendering of trans kids in our schools did not pass. This session saw a wide range of ugly initiatives that did pass, but this one did not. Did we make an impact? It's hard to be sure, but my feeling is we did, and we still do. We speak up so that they don't get the idea that no one is watching. Under the influence of the current terrible administration, there are many awful anti-trans laws being passed around the country. Did you know, recently, the Kansas state legislature approved and passed a bill that immediately invalidates the driver's license of anyone who had updated their gender marker to reflect their true gender? They were given no warning. They were just shut out. You have to wonder how cruel people have to be to think that is a good idea. But it is also true that voters are consistently coming to our defense, with polls and elections showing a strong preference for candidates that support trans rights, right along with other justice issues. So even though it is scary, I ask you this. When in all of human history have people ever had serious debates about the rights of transgender people, non-binary people, or LGBTQ people in general? Almost never, but it is happening now. The laws being passed, or rather the executive orders that are dictated, are often horrible, but justice keeps rising up. Justice will continue to rise up. I am so proud and glad to be a part of this church, which has and will continue to play an outsized role in bringing the message that God loves justice for all people. The mountain is moving. Although the orange man still oppresses our country and gives permission to some to be as hateful as they want, more and more Americans are rising up in resistance, refusing to let this evil work stand. The moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice. I've seen this happening within the span of my own life, and every day I think about pardon me, that no matter what evil schemes are hatched up by wealthy jerks, that the art of justice cannot be stopped. I can't begin to say how grateful I am to belong with a church that shares the real message of the gospel, in which everyone is welcome and needed. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Amy. Good morning, everyone. My name is Jude Brown. I'm from the ACLU of Indiana. Very happy to be with you here this morning. This is a wonderful church. You all are lovely. I've had such a great time so far this morning. Thank you all again for having me. If you don't know, the ACLU of Indiana is the American Civil Liberties Union of Indiana. We're one of the oldest state affiliates. So I think we've been around for 91 years, and no, we've been around for 76 years, and I think the ACLU formerly has been around for 91 years. We file the most litigation of any ACLU state affiliate. We're very busy being in a deep red state. And I want to talk today mainly about tactics and action. Amy did a lot of great explanation of what discrete actions you can take to get some movement on an issue, and Josh is going to talk a little bit about power and organizing specifically. So we just got through a legislative session, which in Indiana is in January and February in a normal year. This last year, we got started a little early because they wanted to have a conversation about redistricting, which would have redrawn our maps and placed people into different districts. We were the only red state to defeat that effort to redistrict our maps mid-district. Yeah. So that would have disenfranchised a lot of people. A lot of people would have had to get their registration updated. That would have undone a lot of like really strong voter engagement and voter mobilization work we've done. And just in case I forget, I want to say now that everybody should vote. And church folks at events love to come up to me and be like, oh, I'm registered to vote. Church people do vote a lot, but that right is not secured in Indiana. So be vigilant. Check your registration, the voter registration deadline if you want to be in the if you want to vote in the primary, I think it's April 3rd, because the primary is like May 3rd, so it's 30 days in advance. So if you want to register to vote, make sure you have that lined up ahead of April 3rd. And then the general this year is November 3rd, of course, so 30 days before that. Do check your registration. They are pulling out all the stops. They are trying to do all of their dirty tricks. So my name is Jude Brown. I use they, them pronouns. I'm an advocacy associate, so I'm not a lawyer. We do most of our work defending civil rights by filing lawsuits against people's employers, law enforcement, the government, when someone's civil rights have been violated. So you can always reach out to the ACLU if you think that has happened, if you have an issue, if you think your civil rights have been violated, reach out to us, and our paralegals and lawyers will work with you. But on the advocacy side, we talk about our legal cases, we talk about the issues that come up there, but we also generally, we want to organize, we want to get people involved in our campaigns. Now, by ancestry and upbringing, I'm Jewish, but my mom married into a big Protestant family, so I've been to lots of church services, and I do love the church, and I love this church in particular because of the emphasis on justice. And we have that in Judaism as well. There's a tradition called Tikkun Olam, which means to repair the world, and you know, different Jews all over the world interpret this differently, but I personally think of it as restoring justice where injustice has been done. It's my duty as a Jewish person to right that wrong and restore justice, and the duty of my whole community and faith tradition is very strong that way. And that's a lot of my background. I have a comparative literature degree. I have a Jewish studies minor. I should have just gone to grad school, I'm thinking now, because due to some changes by the governor, IU is no longer offering a philosophy major, which I was trying to get, so that changed as of Friday, yeah. So things are changing fast, and often for the worst. So our legislative session kicked off early, and ended a little early, too, this year, barely. And we saw a lot of bad bills get defeated. It was, I think, one of the more effective and positive legislative sessions, and that's because of campaign tactics that people engaged in that worked. So every legislative session, we have an LGBTQ plus State House Day, because that is usually up on the block in a legislative session. But we also participate in reproductive and like immigration-related State House Days as well. So don't leave without a brochure or my business card. So that way you can stay informed and get involved ahead of next legislative session and come to like join your voice with ours at those events next session. But obviously, there's very little time to rest where this is concerned, because now is the time to start organizing within your community and to start thinking about tactics and what works on what kind of issues. Three bills that didn't happen that were defeated by successful campaigning were a gender issues bill that would have defined the definition of gender in not a great way and forced trans women into men's prisons and several other horrible things. An abortion bill that would have banned the prescription or sale of mifepristone in the state and created an abortion bounty hunter program like Texas in Indiana. And several other bills were defeated because of personal testimony like Amy's that was provided in hearings to senators and representatives that I think moved the needle, but also people reaching out to their legislators. That's how we defeated redistricting, is people wrote postcards, people wrote letters, people called, people emailed, people showed up to give testimony, people crowded the state house when they were hearing that vote. Those are all things that work. And I think people want a silver bullet. A lot of the time they want to be told, here's the action you can take, here's the opinion you can have, here's the stance you can hold, and that kind of absolves you of responsibility for now or until you feel like you need to take action again later, when really we need to prepare ourselves for like a very long fight that is apart from your rage or your shock or your exhaustion. Be ready to make calls, to tell your neighbors to make calls, be ready to vote, take people to get registered to vote, go encourage your neighbors to take action. And it's the same tactics for things where we fail, like SB 76, a really horrible immigration bill that kind of deputizes all Indiana law enforcement to cooperate with the federal government when it comes to immigration enforcement. That was signed by the governor. It had bipartisan support, which I feel is a little bit of, it was going to have bipartisan support either way. But I feel like that is not a failure of tactics necessarily, but for any Indiana Democrat to have voted on that bill, I think is a little ludicrous at this point. But They use the same tactics. So like the people that are organizing this conservative push all across the country to violate people's rights and to make this a worse place to live are using the same type of campaign tactics and asking people to take the same types of action that we are. So it's a very simple toolkit. It's easy to do. The Heritage Foundation just benefits because they have a smaller and more powerful and wealthier audience to speak to than we do. But there are obviously like more of us that want this country to be a nice place for everyone to live in. Oh, Lord. Okay. So legislative session is over now, but now is the time to prepare to start, you know, figure out who your legislators are, look it up, see who your senator is, see who your representative is. Come see me afterwards, get some literature about the ACLU, get involved, attend events, educate yourself on issues so you can speak about them in a way that engages people, that doesn't alienate people. Vote, get your neighbors to vote, check your registration, stay diligent, vote in the primaries, vote in the general. And most of all, I think especially at this time, what our politicians are doing is getting increasingly like nasty and unneighborly. So more than anything, it's important to be a good neighbor so that people want to talk to you, people want to engage to you, want to engage with you and engage in the things that you want to bring them along with. Yeah, thank you all. So thank you very much. Josh Riddick is next. Thank you.
Good morning, Life Journey. It's good to see y'all. I'm a little more awake than I was at the 9 a.m. service, so we'll see how this goes. My name is Josh. I'm an organizer, the state director of Live Free Indiana. Live Free Indiana is the largest grassroots organizing movement in the state, comprised of three organizing bases, the Black Church Coalition, the Indy Action Coalition, and the Validus Movement, which organizes with justice-involved people. And together, we make Live Free Indiana. So I bring greetings from the Black Church Coalition, of course, the Indy Action Coalition. I'll have an invitation for you at the end, but I want to start with a question. I want you to put your hand, well, not even a question, but I want you to put your hand in the air if you are hungry for justice. Keep it up for me. Keep your hand in the air if you are hungry for justice. Now, I want you to keep your hand in the air for this next part, if it's true. Keep your hand up if you're hungry for power. Oh, Lord, so many hands went down. You're looking at me like, why did that happen? I don't know. I actually do know. For many of us, that question of hungry for power creates a visceral response in our bodies. I watch people's hands go down so quick. I don't want to be someone who's hungry for power. That makes me think I'm like the president or like this foreign leader or like this corporate billionaire. And you can go down the list of all the ways in which people with power have harmed us. And so we have this idea that we don't actually want to be hungry for power. But I come with a question first today, which is how can you be hungry for justice and deliver it with no power? Turn to a neighbor and say, I need power. Turn to another neighbor and say, you need power. Power, as we define it, in its very simple definition, is the ability to act. It is a neutral force. And for most of us, we've only ever been exposed to a kind of power that creates harm, destruction, and damage. And we're often taught a theology that says Jesus was meek and powerless and didn't wield God's power in any way, shape, or form, which is just antithetical to what the text actually says. And y'all know that because you a good church. So I come with this message today as an invitation from Live Free to you that to affect change in the world, to confront some of the things that Jude is bringing up, to confront some of the mountains that we have to tear down, we have got to build power. And we're an organization that does that and invests people to do that every single day. I'm going to do a quick promo and I'm going to come back to something. This Thursday, 6:30 at St. Luke's Methodist Church, United Methodist Church, we are doing a public action, which is one of the tactics we deploy to demonstrate our power in public. We're mobilizing around 400 people to show up with some concrete demands for our local elected officials that will make a material impact in the world. We're focusing on homelessness intervention because at the State House, one of the terrible laws that was passed was SB 285. If you don't know what that one is, it criminalizes people for being homeless and sleeping outside. The mechanisms and the enforcement practice doesn't make a lot of sense. The law is written rather vaguely, but what that always means is that marginalized people are going to get the short end of the stick. So we're making a demand that our city makes a multi-million dollar investment to the tune of $10 million in the city budget with an ask of $30 million to corporate philanthropy, which does exist in the city. There is that much money around, if not significantly more, to house and provide wraparound services to our homeless community. Our second demand is to meet with the mayor regarding immigration. We have some tactics we're deploying to help confront the expansion of ICE in our city and state. We know that the mayor, because of SB 76 that you talked about, that's not something our mayor can actively stand against without getting a lawsuit jammed onto the city. And so we have some tactics we are deploying. We want to share those with you all on Thursday as well. So Thursday, 6:30, St. Luke's United Methodist. That's on West 86th Street. If you take a left on Meridian in 86, it'll be right there. It's the big building. And we're going to be a lot of people there. The mayor's going to be there. And we hope that you are there as well. But I want to talk about one more thing, because Pastor Robert asked me to come talk about how do you engage legislators. And I go around the city and I go around the state and I talk about power. That's the only thing I really talk about is power and self-interest. These are the two currencies our legislators exchange in. Because in the public arena, those are the only currencies that matter. When you've been disempowered or told that you should not have power, there's other currencies that we try to operate in because we're told that's the right thing. Be morally astute. Give the theological case. Give the ethical case. And then you look at your legislators do things that are amoral and unethical and say, how does this work? It's because they're only operating in those two currencies of power and self-interest. And so in our movement, we try to help people exchange in those currencies. How do you think about power in a way that's restorative and empowers community? How do you think about self-interest and what we say is self amongst others, a thing you want in the world that's good for other people too? My self-interest is I want to deconstruct the system of mass incarceration and stop the fact that our city and state spends billions of dollars putting people in cages instead of investing in families. Of Indianapolis' $1.6 billion budget, almost half of it goes to our jail and to our police department. And instead of the money we put into homelessness interventions, $10 million. It's a teardrop in a bucket. What would happen if we put real investments into families, into people, into community? We wouldn't have a need for some of those systems. And so what I organize, I try to be clear on in my self-interest, is that that's why I want power. And then I come into rooms like this and people clap because that's actually something that we want together too. And so we decide to go build power towards that. And so when we engage legislators, we're trying to figure out the same thing. What are the levers of power we have to pull and what is their self-interest? I'll give you a concrete example. 3 years ago, we ran a statewide campaign to get mental health funding at the state level because there was a window of opportunity that some legislators were saying, we should invest in mental health. Too many people go to prison and jail when they're in crisis, and we should get them an alternative. To hear that from a Republican supermajority got our ears up. We said, what we got to do about that? So we went to the Speaker of the House, who's one of the highest and most powerful political leaders in the state. He's certainly more powerful than the governor, because if in a supermajority, they have veto override ability. So even when the governor tries to veto a law, they'll walk right back downstairs, sign it again, and walk it back upstairs. He can't stop it. So that makes our House and our Senate more powerful than your governor. So we start at the Speaker of the House. And I don't know if you ever met our Speaker of the House. He's not always the most friendly character. But that's me trying not to cuss in a church. And so we meet with him, and he said, and we're trying to make the case, like, what do you think about mental health funding? Do you think it's something we should do? And he says, guys, listen, I really don't care about that. That's not my lane. I don't really want to fund those things, but all mental health-related funding conversations I leave to Representative Greg Steuerwald. We don't know who Greg Steuerwald is, so let's go meet with Greg Steuerwald. And we go meet with Representative Steuerwald, and he says, hey, guys, I'm in on this, but here's the thing. I'm taking my cues from Senator Mike Crider. Whatever he's doing, I'm going to support. We know who Mike Crider is, so we go meet with Mike Crider. And we go meet with Mike Crider and discover that he is the majority whip in the Senate. And you might not know what that means. It just means he's a third-ranked senator on the Republican side, which makes him a rather powerful political figure. And it turns out he wants to champion mental health funding in 2023, and he's convinced the leader of the Senate to let his piece of legislation be the number one Senate priority. Most of the time, like this year, the Senate priority is things like taking SNAP away from single moms. In 2023, because of Senator Crider, it was to put mental health funding at the top. And so we, with Senator Crider, figured out how do we pull the levers to get money back into our communities through this state budget. And we ran a very large statewide public action that mobilized 900 people up at a church on 38th Street, made some concrete demands of a bipartisan group of elected officials. We had news coverage from Jeffersonville all the way to Chicago because of how we organized that event. So when we showed up at the State House, they already knew we were coming. We showed up at the State House, there had already been news stories and press releases and press conference and statements put out to say, we support this piece of legislation or we're not going to get in the way of it. Now, we didn't get as much as we wanted because we learned in which some of the other actors on the playing field have just as much power, if not more power, than this statewide coalition. But we were able to secure $150 million in the state budget from 2023 to 2025. Unfortunately, the current governor doesn't believe in those things and resisted those funding mechanisms. And it was just another invitation for us to continue to build more and more power. So I want to leave you with two more principles on this notion of power. But first, turn to your neighbor and say, you know what? I do need power. Now turn to another neighbor and say, you need power. Two of the principles I want to leave you all with today before I invite you again to our public action is this idea that power respects power. For many of us, we show up advocating, fighting, desiring for policy change to exist in the world, but we do so without a mechanism or vehicle that is produced or operating in power. So the subsequent result is that you don't get the kind of respect or response you want from your legislators. That's not just a Republicans at the State House thing. That's at every level of government. If you want your city councilor, your precinct person, to hear you, listen to you, respond to you, have to have power. And power is organized people, organized money, organized votes, organized narratives. So there's a way that coming into a movement like ours or ACLU allows you to be say, I am with a power vehicle. This is the institutional organization that's more than just me, more than just us. You'll see this on Thursday at 6:30 that bringing together around 400 people from around 17 churches is a demonstration of power. It's organized people. We'll make very clear that we also know how to organize votes because we run very large voter programs. And then, of course, the news media in the room will have organized narratives. These sort of things produce real results in the world. The second thing I want to name is that sometimes in progressive spaces, we get stuck in what I call the purity trap. And in the purity trap is we only want to build power or advocate or work with people who agree with us or are ideologically aligned in our convictions about the world. This is dangerous because the kind of power we need to build is not oftentimes the majority opinion. It is evident a majority of this country is not clear yet on how to protect queer and trans folks. It is evident that a majority of this country is not committed yet to addressing homelessness. And there's billions of dollars injected into our media and social media ecosystem to keep it that way. And so part of what we have to be able to do is find folks who may not be aligned with us on some issues, but are aligned with us on these issues and lock arms with them. In 2023 and in this past session, we collaborated with the Sheriff's Association. Our sheriffs in the state do often some of the most wicked things you can imagine through our jails. But the Sheriff's Association has a lot of power, and so we partner with them to stop some legislation and advance some other legislation. The Prosecutors Association is not always in the favor of people in community, but we collaborated with them on some legislation and stopped some bad bills this year with their support and consent and our organizing. So I have this phrase I use, no permanent enemies, no permanent allies, only permanent self-interests. And that's a principle that if we're going to be serious about confronting and meeting this political moment, we got to lock in on. Right now, your government is occupied by a set of billionaires that are taking us into global war, deepening economic impoverishment, destroying the environment, cranking up your utility bill, and robbing our kids of their future. They're most interested in making sure we're fighting amongst each other, turning our back on someone who thinks a little differently than you, looks a little differently than you, votes a little differently than you. And instead, finding a way to say, hey, I actually want my neighborhood to be safe too. I don't want my utility bill to be triple what it was a year ago. I want there to be daycare money so my kids can be around other children and get prepared for school. I want my schools to work and be well-funded. I think most people actually do want all those things. And when we create the conditions to align with people on issues like that, and I want my queer cousin or nephew or friend or family member to be safe in their community and not be harmed and by law enforcement or by a neighbor. Well, it turns out folks who don't agree with you on those issues also don't want people to get harmed by the police or their neighbor. And if we can align on those type of things, that we actually will see that we're much more powerful together than we are apart. So I want you to come check this out Thursday, 6:30, St. Luke's United Methodist Church. Come see how we build power. Come be part of a movement that would welcome you with open arms and wants to invest in you. Because you need power, I need power. And as I get off this stage, turn to a neighbor and say, you need power.
Amen. Let's give our speakers another round of applause. Was that just impactful? I wrote down some things that I wanted to just share with you as we continue with service and get our day going. We always talk about being the hands and feet of Jesus. And a lot of times when we talk about that, we talk about it in terms of praying with somebody or hugging somebody or doing those types of things. But also being the hands and the feet of Jesus means speaking out for people who can't speak for themselves. So when we had meetings throughout this year and we've said to the congregation, what can we do? And everybody said, we want to do more, we want to do more, we want to do more. Well, we're limited, right? There's only so many of us and we only have so many resources, but we can partner with organizations who are already doing this work. And that's why I thought it was important, especially to hear from Josh, because he is on the ground doing those things. Jude just came to us as sort of an aside because I've tried to be partners with the ACLU of Indiana, so I wanted them to be present here, but they said, hey, we can provide a speaker as well. Awesome, right? Because what we learned from Amy is that things that happen at the State House affect people's day-to-day lives. It is not some grand ideological idea. It is people that we love, people that we worship with. And that's why it is important that we raise our voices. But then we heard from Jude and we learned that people who fight back can win in the State House. Like that whole redistricting battle, I was positive that it was going to go the wrong way. But enough people spoke out and made enough noise that it ended up being defeated. So our voices matter and our voices do work. The one other thing I wanted to share with you was there are booths in the social hall today. We have our majority project table that we've been doing once a month for probably the last, 4 or 5 months, where we're sending cards to our legislators in Washington, D.C. Please stop by that booth. Again, your voice does matter. And the legislators need to know the things that we care about. And there's a bunch of us that come to 2950 East 55th Place every week. And they need to know that we're here and we're voting and what we think really matters. So visit the majority project table. Josh is out there at his table. You can ask him questions about how to work with Live Free Indiana. We also have Go Vote Indy has a table out there, and that's a thing that we haven't really talked about a lot to the general congregation. But Amy and Ian, that you will see playing instruments, Amy's right here, they have an organization called Go Vote Indy. And what they did during times of COVID was that they organized, they registered people to vote, number one, in areas where people didn't care who was voting, underserved areas. But number three, how many fingers am I holding? Number two, they organized rides across the city during COVID times to get people to the polls. And there was also, I guess number three is gonna be voter education. Well, Ian and Amy have had a baby, Jackson running around here. So they don't really have the bandwidth to continue with Go Vote Indy. So they asked if the church would want to be a part of that effort. We're still trying to figure out what we can and can't do in that area, but they have a lot of good information about mobilizing people to vote. We can be really mad about everything that comes on CNN every day, but it will not matter if we don't get people to the polls, especially in the midterms, to send a message that we're not going to tolerate this foolishness that we see on the news every day. So visit that table. ACLU is out there and they will tell you how to get their justice and action alerts. This is a good day. If you want to make a difference and see some change, these are the tools that will help us to do that. Amen? So let's have one more round of applause for our presenters today. Thank you for being here. I hope you enjoyed this and let us continue in worship.